Welcome to the Bomb and Gouge podcast. I'm your host, Gary Bissell. This week, we're going to talk about the process of recruiting in college athletics, how that process works, and how it's evolved over time. But first, a word from our sponsor. All right, we'd like to welcome everybody in. So this week, we're talking about recruiting in college athletics. Specifically golf. I'll stay in my own lane here for the most part, but a lot of what we talk about will pertain to all sports. But the main things I want to convey is get a better understanding of how this process works, how it's evolved. I'm going to talk about it first from the PSA side and the parent side, and then from the coach's side. When I say PSA, that's prospective student athlete. Okay, so that's a high school athlete looking to become a college athlete. So I get a lot of questions from PSAs and parents about recruiting and very unsure of how the process works. There's a number of reasons for that. And I think the two main things that make it so complicated is, A, it's evolved so much over time. Most of that's due to technology. And then also the rules change all the time. And that's why I'm not going to talk a lot of rules today, because they do change so much. I don't want to say something in this podcast and then a year from now, that rule has been altered. So, but first and foremost, let's talk about how much the recruiting process has evolved and changed. I spent a winter in Scottsdale, Arizona, the winter of 2012, 2013, and I worked at Greyhawk Golf Club. And Stan Utley, one of the world's most renowned golf instructors, is a teacher there. And he played on the PGA Tour and Champions Tour and played at University of Missouri in the early 80s. And one day we were having a conversation about how much recruiting has changed. He said, you know, in the early 80s, in golf, if you weren't one of the best players in the country, you didn't get recruited. You just went to a school and then you tried out for the golf team and hopefully you made it. So just right there, we think about how much that has changed. You know, Stan Utley was a PGA Tour player. Like, this is a tremendous, you know, and very talented player. And he wasn't really recruited. He had to go to a school and try out. And now, I mean, if you're a, you know, Division III, NAIA, Division II, Division I, doesn't matter, whatever level prospect, you're getting recruited. You know, so that has changed a lot. Now, I'm going to try and help you, if you're a PSA or a parent listening to this, you know, figure out how to really get the most options. That's my main goal of this. And then talk to you a little about what I'm looking for from the coach's perspective. So, let's talk about getting the most options. So how to really market yourself and make yourself available. I'm going to start with recruiting services. Reason being, this fits in with the technology piece, and I do want to state these opinions are mine and my own, and it's not, every coach is not going to share these. So I'm not speaking for all coaches here. I'm just speaking for myself. I do not like recruiting services at all. It's actually kind of a knock against you if you use one. And I'll tell you why. To me, they're kind of lazy. Like, I understand from the standpoint of, okay, I can get my name in front of more coaches, but you have access, and that's the beauty of technology, is you have access to every coach. All you have to do is go to any athletic website and look up their email address. They all have them. I mean, I haven't seen an athletic website that doesn't display the head coach's email. So you can always recruit them yourself, and that will go way further than me getting an email from a recruiting service. You know, even if it's personalized from you, like, I still just would rather you do it as the PSA. So I like to see right out of the gate, it's personalized. Show some initiative. You know, a big thing, technology is good and bad at the same time. Like I said, the good thing is you have access to all people at all times. The bad thing is it creates clutter, and that can make it hard, and it's hard to get back to people. I mean, it's not uncommon for a collegiate coach to get 20 to 30 emails a day from prospective student athletes. And I got to imagine, I mean, if your name's Nick Saban or something along those lines, you're getting hundreds per day. So there is a lot of clutter, all right? So we've got to figure out, you know, how do I get through that clutter? And one way to do that is to write a personalized email. So right out of the gate, say, Coach so-and-so, so Coach Bissell, Coach Saban, whatever, rather than just Coach, because now I could think it's generic. And then the big tip is talk about the school in the first couple sentences. Show why you want to go there, you know, because coaches generally aren't looking to take players just because they want to play a college sport. Like, a lot of people want to do that. You know, why do you want to play here? That's what's important, because if we know you want to play here at our school, now we know you're going to be a little more motivated, all right, and you're going to be a little more passionate. That's going to help you really live up to your potential. So personalized emails are big. I'm not a big fan of recruiting services. Once again, that's just me. Doesn't mean all coaches are like that. I just prefer not to see them. I would rather you take the initiative and put in the time. You know, this is a huge decision and it shouldn't be taken lightly. And you should be the one deciding where you want to go as the PSA and really putting the time into doing that. You know, I look at it from a step ahead. When you're going to get a job, I would never hire a company to send my resume to 120 different companies. You know, I'm going to personally reach out to them and personally apply in a way that has a little more of a touch to it in class. So to help myself have a better chance of getting that job. All right. So the other big thing that we deal with is, where does it start? Like, when does it start? You know, and it starts at different times for everybody. Luckily there's some new rules in place currently to try and delay that process a little bit, because we were getting a little out of hand, you know, offering scholarships to seventh graders and things like that. To me, that's a little scary, but we're starting to get some rules in place to really deny that from happening. But I would say it starts as early as your freshman year. You know, if you really know as a freshman in high school that you want to play your sport in college, start doing research on schools. You know, you're not going to know exactly what you want at 14 years old or 15 years old as a freshman, but at least do the research so when you do figure out what you want and where you fit, that you know what they have to offer. And it can help really relieve some of that clutter. You know, clutter is going to be a big thing I talk about today, because that's a lot of what recruiting is so many schools, so many prospective student athletes. It can be overwhelming. So make sure that you have some ideas of what these schools are like, and then as you start to form your own opinions as you get older and you're 15, 16, 17 years old, you can already have a good idea of what these schools are about, and then when you figure out what the right fit is for you, you can make that decision. All right, so now a big thing to this from the PSA perspective is you want as many doors open as possible. All right, so there's basically three components that coaches are looking for, all right, when they're determining who they're going to offer scholarships to and spots on their team. And that's performance in your sport, academics, all right, so your academic standing, and then your character. And it's the coach's job to dive in and decide where you stand on all those. The academics one is the easiest, all right? And it's also debatably the most important. You know, I'd put that in sports performance right on the same level. But the reason on the same level is they're the two that either decide if you're in or out right out of the gate. So for instance, if you can't perform to a level the school needs to, right, you're out. And if you academically can't handle the rigors, then you're out, and vice versa. So a good example would be, we generally, and I say generally for a reason, there's exceptions to every rule and extenuating circumstances, but for the most part, if you have below 3.0, we don't recruit you. Reason for that is I want to be a golf coach. I don't want to have to be on top of you about your academics all the time. I want to help you grow as a golfer as much as you can. And the other side is, once again, I want to be a golf coach, and you're there for a degree first and foremost. Like, let's be serious here. All right, less than 1% of college athletes make it at the professional level. So your priority is getting your degree. So if that's not your priority right out of the gate, we don't really want to deal with it. You know, that should be something you can handle on your own. So below a 3.0, that's tough for us to really pull the trigger on. Like I said, there are some cases in extenuating circumstances where we take a look at it, but it's very rare. You know, below a 3.0 pretty much knocks you out for Grand Valley Men's Golf. The performance side obviously speaks for itself. And then once you make it past those first two, so you have the performance side and the academic side, now we're looking at the character, right? And how does this person fit in our program? And a little later, I'm going to talk about what we look for in terms of character and things like that and how we make our decisions. But those are basically your three factors right there. So you got to have the academics, obviously, right? It's college. You're a college athlete. And then the performance thing is obviously equally as big. And so when I look at the way this all works and you know, we hear all this advice, like you got to be this and listen, you got to perform. Okay. Like it's a black and white world. It really is. As much as we don't want it to be. And that's the way the real world works. Okay. So one thing I would say to help remove clutter, and this is a big issue that I see on a daily basis, is lack of research when it comes to performance. So what I mean by that, golf is the easiest one to do, that and track and cross country, because they're numbers, right? Now, the numbers change, of course, and they're circumstantial. So, you know, averaging 73 in this state might be different than averaging 73 in that state on these type of golf courses, these tournaments. We get that, right? But you got to be in the ballpark. So, for instance, I get a lot of emails from PSAs who their high school average as juniors in high school is, let's call it 80. Right? That's not uncommon. That I have someone where their high school average is 80. Right? We can't recruit that person if we want to be successful. And does it mean that they may not grow into a good golfer? You know, we may miss on that. Maybe they do grow into a really good golfer. But that's too high and outside our parameters for us to really consider that from a performance level. And the upsetting part to me and how I say removing clutter is I also look at that as a lack of research. Okay, because you can go to our website or any athletics website, look up statistics, and ours are their numbers. It's basic and it's easy. So you can go and look up and see that our best player averaged 70, all right? And our fifth best player, because only five play in golf, averaged 75, somewhere in that neighborhood. So you're really not close, all right? Now, it doesn't mean there's not a school that's a fit for you. It just means you're not a fit for us, and that's okay. Right, so you know, you got to have a little more research in there, and because that really is, you know, I don't mean to be harsh, but it's a waste of time to send the email when you're not close. You know, like for me, when I was going through this process as a college athlete or a high school athlete looking to be a college athlete, you know, I was a good, not great high school player, and I was aware of that, so I wasn't gonna send emails to Stanford and University of Florida. You know, I knew I fit more in that Division II, mid-major Division I level. And that's where I ended up getting offers from. You know, I got mid-major Division I offers and Division II offers. You know, I just wasn't going to waste my time emailing these big schools that I knew I had no chance of playing for. So that's a big part. And a general rule of thumb, because we get this question a lot, okay? So this is a very common one, where a PSA or a parent will say, well, hey, we saw your fifth best player average 75. And I average, or my son averages 75 in high school. That does not mean he can play on our team. And what I mean by that is, this is my opinion and just from what I've seen as a coach and playing college golf and now coaching it, I would say whatever you average in high school, you can add 3 to that, and that's what you would average at that time in college. So in other words, if you average 75 in high school, right now at your current state and skill level, you would average roughly 78 in college. At times it can be higher, just depends on how well you adjust. But I just think from a golf course perspective, it's 3 shots. And that doesn't include all the other factors that make it more difficult at the college level. But in terms of golf course difficulty, high school to college, I would say it's 3 shots. In high school, you're playing 6,200 to 6,500-yard golf courses. They're not set up super tough. You get to the college level, everything is, the very low end is 6,800. Like, if we play a 6,800-yard course, it's a birdie fest generally. But we're looking more at, you know, 7,000 to 7,200. And, you know, national championship last year, we played 7,500. So it gets as long as that. These are all things to consider. And then on top of that, you have the adjustment period. And what I'm referring to there is when you're a high school golfer, you're used to traveling, you know, an hour or less to most of your tournaments. You're sleeping in your own bed every night. In college, you're on the road all the time. You know, we're going to Tennessee, we're going to Florida, Las Vegas, Kentucky, wherever it is, Ohio. You're sleeping in hotels. You're trying to balance a much more difficult academic schedule. And these are all things that are important to understand, okay, to figure out where you fit. All right. So, you know, what I'm getting at through all this is be realistic. Like, I want you to be able to go to the best school you possibly can, but you do have to understand, like, it's a black and white world, and you got to know where you fit. And what's a realistic goal for you? You know, if you average 77 in high school, I hate to say it, but you're not going to play at Arizona State University. You're just not. And the other thing to key in on this, golf's a small roster sport. Our general recruiting classes, we're signing 1 to 4 PSAs per year. So that means out of 100 plus PSAs that are interested in each school, only 1 to 4 of you are going to get a scholarship offer or even a roster spot, right? Sometimes it's not always scholarship offers in small sports. You know, you could be offered a walk-on spot. And that leads me right into my next point of another thing to understand as a small sport recruit like golf is we don't really deal with full ride scholarships. It's extraordinarily rare. So at the Division II level, we get 3.5 scholarships for an entire team. At the Division I level, it's 4.5. Well, sorry, we get 3.6. Not that it makes a huge difference, but we get 3.6 in Division II. It's 4.5 in Division I. So 5 guys play in the lineup. So these are the guys that are playing, contributing. So, and we don't even have enough to get all them on a full ride. So the odds of you getting a full ride, especially out of high school, are almost zero. All right, like you're looking more in the, everything's a partial scholarship. Now, how much of a partial, you know, depends on those three factors again, you know, your performance, your academics, and your character. But full rides are few and far between. You know, you might see full tuition here and there if you're a really good player, but getting your living costs paid for as well are not very common. And this is where I can dive into the rumors you hear on the recruiting trail. This is a very serious thing that I found out. I never noticed it from a player perspective. But as soon as I became a coach in collegiate athletics, I realized how much the rumor mill gets out of hand. You know, everyone's been offered a scholarship from everyone, and everyone's on a full ride, and it's all BS. All right. So when I hear these people say, oh, yeah, so and so got a 70% scholarship offer from school X, and I can look at that PSA and say, well, there's no way. So I know it's a lie, and it may not be a total lie. And what I mean by that, and this is where you can't get trapped into these rumors and hearsay, is if some PSA says he got a 70% scholarship offer and it seems high, he may not be talking just athletic money, because you can get academic money too from the university. So he may be getting 30% athletic scholarship and then 40% academic. So you can't get all twisted up and offended by, well, I heard that this person got 70% from this school and I'm only getting a 25% offer from this school. Well, they may have only gotten 25 or 30% as well. They're just packaging their academic money on top of their athletic money and speaking this as to it's their offer. That's not their offer just from the athletics. That's the offer total, right? Included in the academic package, which is given to whether they were an athlete or not. So these are all things to consider, okay? Now, I said PSA and parents, and I want to get the parent take in here a little bit as well, all right? And I am going to reiterate, these are my opinions, all right? So I don't mean to offend anybody, and I hope I don't, but this is just the way I feel about it. For the most part, the less the parent is involved, the better. And what I mean by that, I'm friends with a lot of the parents of our players. So I don't want to make it sound like I just shut out parents, and that's not the case at all. But we are recruiting your kid, not you. Like, the parent doesn't come to school and spend time with us all day, every day, and is around us all the time. So we're more interested in the PSA, the kid, not the parent. Like, it doesn't, you know, how much I like the mom or dad generally doesn't influence my decision. Like, I want to get to know the kid. So what I'm saying by this is, when a visit happens, it's fine for parents to come along. I have no issue with that at all. You know, especially if they're paying for the college, because then I think they should see it. but as far as who's asking all the questions, that should be the PSA. All right. It's actually a red flag if the parent asks all the questions, or even half of them. Okay. Because once again, like, we're not recruiting you. We're recruiting the PSA, the kid. So I want to know what he wants to know. And, you know, I want to get to know him, because he's the one that I am going to spend an incredible amount of time with over the next 4 to 5 years. All right, so I've got to get to know the kid. And where the parents come into play is, if we really like the parent, it can help, right? Because generally kids turn out somewhat like their parents, not always, but it's more often than not. So that can help. But once again, going back to parent involvement, you know, as far as just from an involvement perspective, like, I want to get to know the kid. And the more parent involvement there, the harder that can be to do. We want to hear from them, and we want to get to know them and know if they're going to be a good fit. And the other thing that I've noticed is hard for a lot of parents is when they come on their visit, they're 16, 17 years old. So I get it a little more. Like, they're still minors. And, you know, they still need to be guided quite a bit. And they'll need to be guided throughout college, of course. But understand, when they come to college, they are now an adult. Like, they're 18 years old. They're an adult. They need to start making their own decisions. And I think the college choice, that's the first really big decision a young adult gets to make, right? As far as, like, setting themselves up for their future. And that's one thing I was really thankful for, especially looking back on it, is my parents were so uninvolved in the recruiting process, and I loved that, because I got to make my own decisions and my own judgments. In fact, out of all the college visits I went on, my parents only went on one of them, and that was down in Florida. I visited a school in Florida, and my dad came with me on that one, just because I was 16, and that's a, you know, flying, and that's a, there's a lot going on there. But other than that, all the other college visits I did by myself. Okay. So I drove to them, and, it just really helped me, once again, relieve some clutter. I didn't have to, feel like I had to take their opinion into play. And, the other thing, I think the big reason they did that is they didn't want to influence me on that. Like, they wanted me to make that decision, and understanding it would be my first real big decision I got to make on my own. I think that's really, really important. So the last thing I'll say about the parent side, where I think the parent should be involved, is the financial side. So when we're looking at a visit in a recruiting process, any questions about golf and how the programs run, this and that, those should come from the PSA, because they're the ones that need to know, because they're the ones that are going to be going through it. If you, as the parent, if you're paying the remainder after the scholarship, then you should be asking the finance questions. Now, if it's on the PSA and they've got to take out student loans, then it should be them asking. But that's where it certainly makes sense for the parent to be very involved, is, hey, explain to us how the finance works, and we're always very happy to answer those questions. So, you know, that's my take on all this, and from the PSA perspective and the parent perspective. So let me flip to the coach side here, and I'll talk a little bit about Grand Valley Men's Golf and what we look for. And, once again, this will be very different, like, coach to coach and school to school, but it'll just be one good example to maybe help people understand this process a little bit, and, you know, at least one example of what we look for. So my process is, I start looking when they're sophomores in high school. So I take the sophomore class. Make a list. Maybe, you know, throughout the Midwest, I may make a list of 30 to 50, depending on the year. All right, of these are people who fit our mold from the outside looking in. So in other words, the performance is there and the academics are there. The character remains to be seen. That I got to get in touch with them, talk to them on the phone, meet them in person. In person's big for me. Like, we got to have a visit and spend a couple hours together and see if this relationship's going to work. All right, so we create that list, 30 to 50, and then based on performance over the next year, and some phone conversations, email exchanges, then we start narrowing that list down. By junior year, we might be down to 15. So let's say it's a year where I decide we need three incoming freshmen. So we got three people from this class that we're going to sign. We'll take those 15, get some more in-depth conversations with them, evaluate them in person. So go to tournaments, analyze their fundamentals, their skill set, what's their attitude like on the golf course. That's a big thing. Do I feel like you kind of have it together mentally, or are you a little bit of a basket case? You know, those are things that will influence our decisions. And then as we go through that, we'll get down to, say, our top seven. And once we're ready to make offers, we'll offer 1, 2, and 3. So our number 1, 2, and 3 on our list, if we have three scholarships we're giving out that year, scholarship offers, not full scholarships. And we'll offer those three. In a great year, 1, 2, 3 all commit, and we're good to go. If our number one commits and number two says no, then we offer 3, 4, and so on down the list. And we try and get that all done by summer going into their senior year. So we like to do the early signing period and just be done with it in November. And that way I can focus on our team throughout the year. That whole winter and spring, I don't have to worry about, are we going to get enough players and, we still have someone we need to sign. I can just focus on the team. And I think that's appreciated by our guys that are currently on the roster, which is always the most important thing at the time. And recruits will appreciate that when they actually get there, that our focus is on our current players. So once again, start looking at you as a sophomore, just from the outside looking in, and then we get more in depth, start to evaluate you in person and evaluate you all the time, based on how do our phone conversations go, do you have the traits that we're looking for? And on the other side, you should be evaluating us I've told every recruit this we've ever come in contact with is, we want what's best for you, no matter what, even if that means not coming to Grand Valley State and playing men's golf here. Right? We want what's going to ultimately help you, because that's what we're really in the business of, right? Is developing young men and helping them really achieve their maximum potential. And if that's not here, we're fine with that. We just want, a place where they can succeed and really develop today's youth. So, now, a little more into my belief on what I'm looking for. I'm not going to get too much into a golf perspective. I'm going to talk more on the character side, right? Because the performance is a performance. Like, if you're shooting under par a lot, we're probably interested. All right. But if we've got a couple recruits that are shooting under par a lot, now we got to start deciding. And this is the big thing. Everybody can look at somebody and say if they're good. That's easy, especially in golf. The hard thing to predict is who's going to be the best. So who's going to end up being the best rather than who's good right now? Because that's what really matters, right? Is by their junior, senior year, who's going to perform at elite level. And this is something where nobody gets it right all the time, because it's very, very difficult to predict, because we don't know how you're going to react when you get to school. But I think a lot of us as coaches, we've developed certain core values where we feel like if you have these, you have a really good chance of developing into something that's really going to help us and help our program. So for me, I'm very simple with it. I've got two big things that I look for: competitiveness and passion for the sport. So I could be different than a lot of coaches in this way, because I like guys that are a little fiery, have a chip on their shoulder. That fits our mold. At Grand Valley, I think it certainly fits my coaching style. So we look for that. Like, I'm not saying I want a hothead, but someone with a little fire in them, that's great. I'm all about that. So, and the reason for that is we really pride ourselves on hard work and, being the most prepared team at every event. That's always our goal. And that's only going to happen if, A, you have an extreme passion for your sport. Like, you got to love doing this, and not everyone does. You got to love being at the course, love the early mornings, just really eat, breathe, and sleep golf. And that'll carry you a long way, okay? Because that'll make it fun for you, which is so important. Yeah, I can't understate how important that is. You know, if this feels like misery to you and like it's a job, you just doesn't mean you can't be successful. You're not going to be as successful as you would be otherwise if it really was something that you thoroughly enjoy doing all the time. And the second one is competitiveness. And I talk about this within our team and with recruits all the time. You've got to be an extraordinarily competitive individual. You know, I always use the phrase, you need to hate losing more than you like winning. Everybody likes winning. And it's not hard to like winning. Like, it feels good, all right? But do you hate losing? Like, when you get your butt kicked, does it fill you with a burning desire? Like, I'm not going to let that happen again. And the reason I believe in this, we've seen it from pretty much all the greatest athletes of all time. You know, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Tiger Woods. You know, the list goes on and on and on. Were these guys, like, when they would fail, it would motivate them, right? They couldn't handle it. It just made him so angry, and it made them work harder. So we look for that as well. And that's why when I evaluate in person, like, I've got to see you play enough times where I see you play poorly, because that to me will justify more than anything. Like, I got to see how you react. So, and there's some give and take here. Like, I don't want you to be a poor sport and throwing clubs and, you know, being rude to your playing competitors and things like that. But on the other side of the coin, like, I don't want to see you just walk off the course and be like, oh yeah, I shot 80, whatever. Like, no. What do you mean, whatever? Like, what are you going to do to make sure that doesn't happen again going forward? So, you know, those are two huge things for me that really make or break who we're going to end up offering. So that's going to be it for this week. I hope this helps for a lot of you who are really a little confused about this process, because it is tricky. It's a tricky process. There's a lot going on, and it can be difficult to navigate. So if you do have any more questions that I did not answer, feel free to send me a message at the Bomb and Gouge Twitter handle. It's just at Bomb and Gouge, and I will answer those the best I can. So thanks for tuning in this week, and we'll see you next week, Monday at 7 a.m.